Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Basra Daf Mem, and we will begin on Daf Lamates Amud Beis, all the way at the bottom line. Amar Rava Amar Rav Nachman Becha Bifnei Shnayim. Becha has to be done for Becha. We keep on speaking about it now. Masechta to be considered a valid Becha, it has to be made in front of two people. Vein Tzarich Lan Meksuva. The people who had the mecha done in front of them don't have to have heard from the person who made the mecha write down the mecha. Even if they weren't instructed to write it, they may write it because it's a schus. The person who made the mecha has what to gain from them writing down this mecha. And since they have what to gain from there's a rule of Zachar L'Adam Shaloi B'Fanav, and therefore the Mecha can be done even without his express direction. But the question the Tzais and many Rishonim address in learning this Gemara is that the halacha always is that for an Eidus, for any testimony to be considered valid testimony, it has to be said orally by the Eidim. Otherwise, the halacha is mipiem, v'loy mipik sovim. Eidus that's not issued orally is not considered a valid Eidus. So the question is, even if these Eidim have the right to write down this Eidus, why would it be considered valid Eidus if it's only in writing and not being offered orally? There are many answers that the Rishonim offer to this question. The Baal Amar says that since the person who made the admission has what to gain from this admission, so then the halacha is that the shtar is a kosher shtar, even if it's just written. The Ramban says that there's a difference between a shtar and eidus. Testimony has to be offered orally. This shtar is not to be understood as testimony. This shtar is rather to be understood as the Eidim are just coming to put down on a shtar that he doesn't have ownership on this property. That is acceptable. Another opinion is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says that when is there a halacha of mipiem v'loy mipik sovim? So suggests Rabbeinu Tam, it was only said by an individual who doesn't have the ability to speak. Rachman Tzlan, an individual who doesn't have the ability to speak, so there is a halacha that his testimony will not be accepted by committing it to writing. But if you have an individual who has the ability to speak, then there's no problem on mipiem v'loy pik sovim. He says that the Rambam says a different explanation. The Rambam's explanation is that there is a concern of shleitena dalas b'snei lovin. Often in Shas, we find that Chazal were concerned that people should not be reluctant to lend money, because they're going to see that it's going to be difficult to get back the money. And here they're saying, if a person won't be able to make a mecha, the Chazal were concerned about that, and therefore the halacha is that a shtar, that it could be written even though they weren't directed to write it. The Nesivus quote says that the Rambam differentiates between different type of shtaris. And he says that there's a shtar kinyan, which creates a kinyan, or there's a shtar raya, which is just here to testify what something happened. And says the Rambam, that's only by shtar raya, which we're discussing in our shiur now, is the halacha that it can be written and can be accepted from a written document. Other shtaris, however, the halacha would be, are only valid if they are, the other testimony has to be explicitly said, and if otherwise a shtar, a kinyan, the Eidus would have to testify to it. The Tosfos also points out that we're saying now that given the different explanations that we just gave, why a shtar, even if it was written, why Eidus, even if it's written, is considered valid. Tosfos says that that the Gemara doesn't differentiate between Dine Mominus and Dine Nefashos. Presumably, says Tosfos, because there is no Nafgamina. And by both of them, Eidus that are committed to a shtar is satisfactory. However, he quotes Beretam that does differentiate between Dine Mominus and Dine Nefashos. And only like the case that we're discussing, which is Dine Mominus, will the halacha be that a shtar is fine even if it was just written testimony. But when you speak about Dine Nefashos, then the halacha is that it has to be oral testimony. And the explanation is because, as we just said, that by Dine Mominus, there's a concept of Leitino Delos B'fnei Lovin. We want to encourage commerce, and the way we can encourage it is by letting testimony be accepted by writing. However, when we speak about Dine Nefashos, that's not the same. Another explanation that the Tumim suggests, differentiating between Dine Mominus and Dine Nefashos. Dine Nefashos, the person who's saying Eidus, is saying Eidus regarding something that the person saying Eidus regarding an act that took place. And when he's saying Eidus regarding an act that took place, the Eidus has to be oral. But in a situation such as the case that by Dine Mominus, they're not really saying testimony to an act. They're saying testimony to a fact. And when you're saying testimony to an act versus a fact, then the halacha is, it could be even committed to writing. The Beis Yitzchak gives a different explanation. The Beis Yitzchak suggests that what Eidus accomplish by Dine Nefashos and what Eidus accomplish by Dine Mominus is very different. He explains that Eidim by Dine Nefashos create the situation. For if there are no Eidus, the halacha doesn't recognize as if anything happened. By Dine Mominus, they're only here to testify to what happened, but they're not creating a fact. And since they're not creating facts, therefore, it could be even in writing. Maida. So the Gemara now will discuss Maida. Maida means that somebody's about to give a gift or somebody's about to sell property, and the person who's giving the gift or selling property, he's saying that this is happening against my will. I was forced into that. And therefore, the shtar that will be written to testify that this gift was given, or the shtar that will be written to testify that I sold this document, was done under the arrest. And therefore, he is saying this to make that shtar will be invalid. However, the halacha explained the Rishonim, is that the only time we could consider, as we're learning in our Shia now, we will continue to consider on Maida a valid halachic act, is if the Maida was written before the actual transaction took place. But if the Maida was written after the transaction took place, then the Maida will be, as the Miri explained, too little, too light. Says the Gemara, b'fnei shnayim, the midah should be done in front of two people, and the people who hear it have to vein tzarach loyma ksuvu. The people could put it into writing, even though they weren't so instructed. The Meiri further points out that when will that be the halacha that a midah is considered on midah, is if the people who were asked by the party involved, that were told that this is a Maidah, and they were told that you are Eidim to that fact, then they're considered Eidim to that fact. However, if they only just happen to overhear that this party is saying, well, what I'm doing under duress, but not that they were officially appointed to be Eidim to that, then they won't be considered Eidim. The Rishonim also point out that our Gemara began with two halachas, which are the same. One was the halacha regarding a mechah, that you have to have the mechah in front of two people, but you don't have to say ksuva and they can write it down. And the same halacha is by medar, that the medar has to be done in front of two people, but they don't have to be instructed to write it down, that it should be considered a valid medar. And the question is, why was it not mentioned as one halacha? So Rashbam explains that the reason is because these halachas were taught at different times in the yeshiva, and now our Gemara is just compiling all of these halachas. There are other achroinim, whoever suggests, that even though as far as the basic halacha, medar and mecha are the same, there are differences between the halachas. Who could be the Edom? And since not regarding all of them, are they the same? That's why the halacha is that, that's why the Gemara did not combine them. The next case is Haidah, that somebody admits that he owes money. The halacha is that, again, for it to be considered valid, it has to be said b'fnei shnayim, in front of two edim. But in those case, in that case, tzarech lo miksuva, if he wanted committed to writing, they have to be told to write it. And if he did not tell them to write it, they may not write it. Because what happens is, and we're going to be speaking about this extensively, we've already learned this halacha, there's a difference between a milva b'shtar, a debt that is in writing, versus a milva aper. A milva b'shtar, the halacha is, you could go after lekuchas. You could go after people who I sold this who I sold my property to, but if the debt is here before the sale, there's a lien on that mortgage. Something which is a milva aper doesn't have that ability. And therefore, the edim cannot make this into a milva b'shtar unless they were so instructed. And as the Miri explains, there are a number of situations when we speak about Haidah. One is that the malva approaches the loiva and says, you owe me money. And in front of edim, the loiva admits that he owes him money. The halacha is that in such a case, even though the loiva admitted, he could afterwards say, Mshat ani bach, I wasn't serious. If he admitted in front of two people that he said that I owe people money, and again, what happened to Miri explains is that people were saying about a certain individual that he's heavy in debt. And then the person says, well, I'm not so heavy in debt. I only owe this person money. So there too, says the Meiri, he could back out and say, I didn't really mean what I said. However, the case of our Gemara, explains the Meiri, is where this person on his own admitted in front of two edim that he owes somebody money. He told them, "Du lachem, be aware, shani chayiv b'plani money, mana, I owe this person a mana." That is a haidah that obligates him, even though he made that haidah not in front of the malva, and he can't say that mishata heisi. Since on his own volition, he made that admission, that's why the Miri says he can't back out. The Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam says even in such a case, he could say, I wasn't serious. But the reason he could back, only time he can't back out is if he made that admission in front of the malva, according to the Rambam. And if it wasn't made in front of the malva, then it's not considered a haidah that he can't back out. Says the Gemara, kinyan, if somebody makes a kinyan sudar, that we know that the buyer picks up the sudar, something that belongs to the seller, and that like that he takes ownership. And as we learned extensively in the Masechet Bava Metzia, the way metatlin are normally transferred is with Mashiach, Mesira, Hagbah. This is a way to make a kinyan without requiring all of that. So the halacha is kinyan has to be made b'fnei shnayim, in front of two people. Ve'enitzarech lehem k'suva, they could write down what they saw, even though they weren't so instructed. The Rashbam says that these edim that we're discussing are not really here to make the kinyan into a valid kinyan. What they're here to do, what they're here to accomplish, is just be able to say that we saw this happen. So all that they're accomplishing is that they are edim, that they're able to say we saw what happened, but they don't have to do any more. There's a machlokes in the Rishonim that we're saying that two edim could say this testimony. Are they only considered valid edim if they were so appointed to be edim, or the fact that they just saw it would be sufficient? The Rashba and the Ritva say that they're only considered valid edim for this if they were so appointed. If they weren't appointed for this, then the halacha is that they're not going to be considered valid edim. And the Shulchan Aruch HaChosh Mishpat Simen Lamed Tes Sif Hei says that kashehizman edim lekinyan, the edim have to be designated. And only those could be accepted, not those that weren't so testified. The Nesiva says that certainly if they weren't designated, they can't say they can't write down what they saw. So the Nesiva is actually opening up a question here. Does that mean that they can't write it down if they weren't so designated, but they could testify without writing, or are they completely disqualified if they were not designated? Kiyum shtaris. So often we learn in Shas about kiyum shtaris, that there's a shtar, there's a document that says somebody owes somebody else money. The shtar is signed by edim, and there's a concern that if somebody will contest the validity of the shtar, the way the shtar is certified is by being able to bring the edim and say to the edim, do you remember the story, or is this your signature? But sometimes somebody's concerned that if that's going to happen and we're going to need certification of the shtar, the edim may not be here and we may not be able to find anybody who could recognize the signature. So in order to avoid any problem, while we have the edim here, we bring them to a bezdin, and the bezdin certifies, they testify that this is indeed our signature, and then the bezdin certify the shtar. That's called kiyum shtaris, and the halacha is that for order for kiyum shtaris to be valid, it has to be done b'shloisha, in front of three individuals. A bezdin is required for kiyum shtaris, and the bezdin always needs three people. The Rashbam points out that even though we know the halacha is that b'di'evid, the bezdin that had only two members is a valid bezdin b'di'evid, but as the Gemara says in Masechet Sanhedrin, they call the bezdin chotzef. Here, it wouldn't be acceptable even b'di'evid. Here, you need to have three dayanim, and two would not be acceptable even b'di'evid. And the explanation that he gives is because the purpose of having three is because we're not relying on the two edim. But if we want to have more than the two edim, but if we're going to have only a bezdin of two, what have we accomplished with the kiyum shtaris? The Rishonim debate, the Gemara often when it speaks about a bezdin, and we know, as we just said, that the typical bezdin is three dayanim, the Gemara often debates what's going to be the halacha if you have one dayan, but he's a dayan mumcha. What's going to be the halacha? Could a dayan mumcha, an expert dayan, be the one to be mekayim mishtar, even though he's one person? The opinion of the Ro'ah and the Ritva is that there's a gzeiris chazal, as we just learned in the Gemara, that Kiyum Shtaris always needs three Dayanim. Otherwise, there'll be a concern of Eid Mipi Eid, etc. Trumas Hadeshin says that the Halacha, that even though it makes sense to say you would need to have three Dayanim, Trumas Hadeshin says the minig is that we could use one Dayan. As far as the Halacha, says the Beis Yosef says that we in Chosh Mishpat Simen Mem Vav, nobody ever follows the opinion of the Trumas Hadeshin as far as Kim Shtaris, and you always need to have three Dayanim. The Daki Moshe says that that is the minig, and the Daki Moshe says it's not just because that's the minig. He says that's the Halacha. And Ramah in Chosh Mishpat Simen Mem Vav Siftalit actually says a very interesting psak. He says, "Bezman hazeh, we don't rely on a dayan mumcha. We don't rely on a dayan, on one individual dayan to paskin a din Torah. But as far as kiyum shtaris is concerned," says the remark, "that we do rely on a, for this we rely on a dayan mumcha." And the shach disagrees. He says that certainly we don't follow the opinion of the Ramah on this question. And he says the Gemara is very clear here that in order to have Kiyum Shtaris, you need to have three Dayanim. Simen Mamhak. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava Ikashli, if I have a question regarding the various halakhas that we just learned, Hakashli, this is the question I have. Hi Kenyan, we just learned that Rav Nachman says that a kinyan is done with two edim, and we don't have to give them instruction to write it, that that should be valid to write it. So says the Gemara, hechi dami, exactly what is the situation? If we're going to consider it kamaisa bezdan dami, if the writing of the shtar is making it as it was conducted by bezdan, so as we just learned, bezdan always requires three dayanim. And why would we consider it, explains the Rashbam, like a Ma'isa Bezdin? Because what Bezdin would add is that we know, as we often learn, that there's a concept of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. And what Hefker Bezdin Hefker says is that Bezdin has very strong authority. And therefore, if there's any question on this Kinyan, it's valid because of the authority vested into Bezdin. If that's the case, you should have to have three people like every Ma'isa Bezdin. V'loy k'Ma'isa Bezdin Domi. And if we not consider it like a Mestim Bezdin, Amai en Tzarech L'Ksuba, why would the halacha be that it could be done without instruction? And again, as Tosfos explains, people are not anxious that people should be aware of what they're doing, that should be aware that they're selling off their assets. And since they don't want people to know that they're selling off their assets, the halacha ought to be that it should not be considered valid unless they gave express permission to put into writing. Answers the Gemara. Basa the Baya, after this question was posed, had the Pashtal Oilam Lavka Maisa Bezdin Bami. A Kenyan is not considered a Maisa Bezdin. V'hocha Tama Mai, why is the reason that Einat Tzarech Loi Miksuva, why is they're not necessary to give permission to write it down? It says the Gemara, Mishum Destam Kinyan L'Ksiva Oimid. Any Kinyan is as if it's, especially the Kinyan Sudar, he means to write it down. And the way I saw the Rishonim explain this Gemara, the person who made a Kinyan Chalipa, Kinyan Sudar that we discussed a few moments ago, did not use the normal fashion of Kinyan. The normal fashion of Kinyan is Meshicha, Mesira, Hagba. He wanted to make it quick and easy. How do you accomplish quick and easy? The way you accomplish quick and easy is with Chalipin. But since we see that that is the intention of this individual, to make it quick and easy and good, he also certainly has no problem with that being committed to writing. And the Meshach Chochma, based on this, Gemara explains the Pasuk in Rus, which is the Pasuk that teaches us the concept of Chalipin. The Pasuk says, Sholof ish naloi, that Kinyan was done with the shoe, v'zois hatuda b'Yisrael. Says the Meshech Chachma, what was the purpose of the Kenyan? Zois Te'uda B'Yisrael, to publicize in Klal Yisrael that there was a Kenyan. And therefore, the Pasuk is saying, as soon as you have a Kenyan Chalipin, you could commit it to writing, even without express permission. Says the Gemara, Rav Yosef Damer Tavaya, we spoke earlier about Maida, and they both taught us that like a Sfina Maida, that we cannot commit a Maida to writing, Elaman Deloit Seis Ladinai. If somebody refused to accept the Psak Bezdin, there we believe him that he's selling it, but that he's, if somebody is not following the Psak Bezdin, so there we could accept that he's only doing it because he's under duress. But if somebody did what he's supposed to do, then we should, so why instead of writing a Maidah, didn't you just go to Bezdin? So only regarding an individual who will not follow what Bezdin says, so there the person has no option but to write a Maidah. But in a case where the person is a person that's going to listen to Bezdin, so instead of writing a Maidah, the right thing to do is just go to Bezdin. And therefore, we don't write a Maidah. Versus Abai v'Rava d'Amri Tavayu, Abai and Rava disagree, and they say, I feel alive, alive. Even if it's a person of the prestige of Abai v'Rava, we write Maidah. Why? So explain the Rishonim, because not always is a Bezdin available. And therefore, the person will be feel forced to do what he's doing. And he can't take the other party to Bezdin because there is no other Bezdin readily available. Am Nedaya. So Nedaya continues discussing Maidah. Kam Maidah de like Sibbe. Any Maidah that it's not written in it. Anan Yedin and Bibnusa de Plenya. We are aware of what happened. La Maidahu. So the way the Rashbam explains the Gemara, what the Gemara means to say is that the Edom are only considered, the Maidah is only valid, and what the Edom are writing is only valid if they could say that why, what is the oinus? Just saying that somebody came to us and said that there was he's forced into this is inadequate. The Ramban disagrees. He says that why would it be so required that they have to know what happened? And therefore he explains that all they have to write, that they know that this was done under duress. But if they say that we saw that the seller forced the buyer to sell, that isn't proof that it was under duress. Because maybe it indeed started under duress, but then he changed his mind and he was willing to sell it. So they have to be able to testify that we know with certainty that this was done under duress. So says the Gemara, this halacha, the Nardoi said, Maidah demai. What type of Maidah were they referring to? Idigita or the Masnasa. If it's a situation where a husband is saying that the get that he's giving to his wife, he's doing under duress. Or it's a Maidah that somebody is forced to give a gift, and he said that I'm doing it under duress. Says the Gemara, Hagliyum Milsab Almihi. The purpose of this Maidah is only to tell us that he's not satisfied what is happening here. So even if the Edom, again, we're going back to the Rashbam's Pshat, even if the Edom don't know why he is dissatisfied, this gift become null and void. Because when we have a sale, so there we could say that the person who is being forced to sell is selling because he needs funds. He would prefer not to have to sell what he's selling. So in order that it should be a valid Maidah, they have to be able to know what is the truth. And they can't write that unless they know the details. But somebody who's divorcing a wife, or somebody's giving a gift, they're not getting anything in return. There's a fundamental difference between a sale and a get or a gift. In a sale, the seller is getting money for what he's selling. He may be dissatisfied with the fact that he needs to sell, but he's getting something in return. So in order for it to be considered on my door, the Eidim really have to know what is going on here. But in the case of a get, or in case of a gift, where the giver of the get or the giver of the gift is not getting anything in return, so that there the halacha is that maybe they're saying the truth, that this is being done under duress. Elamai, what are we going to say? That the medar that we're referring to here is the zvini, it's referring to a sale. But ask the Gemara, I'm a Rava, hasn't Rava taught us the like kusvini medar zvini? We never write a medar on a sale. Because if the Eidim know that it's being done under duress, so there's no need for medar. And if it's not, that if they don't know that it's being done under duress, then why would it be a good gift? And as the Rishonim point out, we're going to have a sugya later in our Gemara that Teluyu v'zovin, zvini zvini, that if somebody sells something under duress, the halacha is that it's considered a valid sale, even though he really wasn't happy about it. So in order to avoid a sale, it's much more complicated to just say it was a meidah. Says the Gemara, Lailam Dizvina, we are speaking about a sale, but Maida Rava Hechad Anas. When a person was under certain type of pressure, which the Gemara is going to identify in a moment, or Kamaisa Bitabadisa, that in such a case, that's where Nadoi teaches us that Maidah is going to be valid. And not only are they going to agree that it's valid, but as they taught us, the Eidim have to know why is it considered under duress. What is the situation? Says the Mardu Gavri, the Mashkin Padis El Chavri, the Lash Shonim. As we've learned many times in our Masechtas, Baba Metzia and Baba Basra, if somebody lends money to someone else, and the borrower, the Loiva, gives the lender, the Malva, a Mashkin, if the Malva were to use the Mashkin, and that if the Malva were to use the Mashkin and then get paid back the entire amount that's owed to him, there would be a very serious problem. The problem would be that he's getting ribbis. But the Gemara speaks about a Mishkanta Desura, where the borrower gives the lender security, a Mashkin, and the arrangement they have is that there's a certain amount that the lender eats the payris of that mashkin. They predetermine a value to that on an annual basis. And then after he ate up the amount of payris that are equivalent to the loan is canceled. So the Gemara says that who gave mashkin b'dis l'chavir l'tlash shanim, he gave him a mashkin to the surah for 3 years. It could be for more than 3 years. And after he was there for 3 years, Omer, Malva says to the loiva, imizabnitli, if you'll sell me the property, mutav. He says, I want to buy this property, and I'm not giving you many options. If you'll sell it to me, great. V'iloi kafshin l'shtar mishkanta, I'll conceal the shtar mishkanta, v'amina l'kuchi b'yodi, and I'll say that this is something that I bought. And the proof that I'll have is that I have a chazaka on this property. So this is a sale, but it's a sale that was done under duress. And since it was a sale that's done under duress, kegavna, under such circumstances, kasvina medar, this is where it's a sale and a medar is written. But as Nadoi taught us, the Eidim have to be aware of the circumstances in order that it should be a valid medar. Says I saw that the Shalos HaTshuvos Birchas would say, Simakov Dalid says that we're learning on the regular sale situation, you can't write a medar because the halacha is Teluyu V'Zovin, if you sold something under duress, that the sale is a sale. Says, so he explains that even, and the question is, why if you're doing something under duress, you're selling it under duress, why is it acceptable? Says, so he explains that the person that didn't want to sell, but sells, ultimately comes to terms with it. That, because at the end of the day, nobody could force you to sell something you don't want to sell. Here, however, and if you sold, you were presumably agreeable to the sale. But in the case of our Gemara, where you're selling, not only because you don't want to sell, because you realize that if you don't sell, you'll be worse off. That's why it's different than the regular case that we don't accept on my door on a sale. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Hai matanta matirta. If a shtar matana was written secretly, loy magbinaba, it's not going to be considered a valid gift. A gift that's given quite secretly is considered invalid. There are many explanations as to why. The Rashbam says that the fact that the giver wanted to avoid publicity is an indication that he really doesn't own what he's giving away. We have to be suspicious that the gift that he's giving was already sold or given to somebody else. The Taras Chaim explains that the fact that he's acting this way is a proof that he doesn't mean to give the gift b'lev shalom with full consent. The fact that he's hiding it questions the real intent. The Rambam explains that we're concerned about future fraud. We suspect that later on this giver may sell this property to somebody who doesn't know that it was given away as a gift. So in order to avoid, and then we'll have all sorts of problems, in order to avoid those kind of problems, the Chazal nullified any gift that was given that way. The Rav Hai Goyin, however, says there is one situation where a gift that was given secretly is okay. And that's the case that we often have in Shas of a Shchimeran. A sick person on his deathbed who gives instructions to give his property as a gift, and such a person stipulates that it should be kept secret until he dies. There, it will be acceptable. And there are different explanations given by the Rishonim as to why. The Kesef Mishnah explains, we don't suspect a shimira of giving a fraudulent gift. A person who's in that situation, who's on the verge of death, is not going to be involved in doing something like that. The Ritva explained that we're only suspicious when we don't have a good reason to understand why is this person being secret about it. But in the case of a shchemira, we could understand that this person is acting such a way because he doesn't want his friends and family who may be upset with the way he's dividing his gifts. That's why he wants to keep it quietly. The Rambam says that the reason why shchemira is different is because the gift of a shchemira is not effective until after his death. The halacha actually is that a shchemira can retract what he says until he dies. So if a shchemira, says the Rambam, instructs not to publicize the gift until his death, but he says it's going to be okay to publicize it after his death, it's not considered a secretive gift because it's really not a gift until after he dies. And when he wants it to be a gift, he is making it public. Therefore, it's not a problem, says the Rambam, consistent with his opinion. Therefore, in such a case, there is no concern that the sick man is trying to cheat anybody by then selling the property that he gave away. Because actually, he can't sell it because it's not considered given away until he unfortunately passes away. So there's an interesting shiloh where there was a woman the woman whose husband passed away, and she comes to Beis Din, and we know that a wife is not the yoirish of a husband midiraisa, and she comes and tells Beis Din that some of the silver and gold that his husband owned, that he gave it to her early in the marriage, but he said to her when he gave it to her, he said, "I want this gift to be kept secret." And the reason he said that I wanted to keep it secret is because I don't want people to know that I'm a wealthy person. Is the gift a valid gift? And at first glance, based on the Gemara and the explanations that we just learned, the gift should not be considered a valid gift, because we just learned that Matanosa Matamirta is not considered a valid gift. The Alshech, in the Shas Tshuvos Alshech, Siman Tzadik Tes, he says that that's not true. And in the case that we just mentioned, even though she was instructed to give the get, to keep it secret, it, the halacha is that it's a valid gift. And he explains why. He says, why is there a concern that the gift, as we just explained, that the gift is not a good gift? Why did you keep it secret? But here, where it was done with a good explanation, he doesn't want people to know he's wealthy. Or, so in such a case, that even though we normally have a question why you kept something secret, in a case where it's there's a good reason to understand that he kept it, why he kept it secret, the halacha is that it's not considered a matanos or temirta, and it's a valid gift. So delves the Gemara into this sugya. Heichidami matanos or temirta. What exactly is a matanos or temirta? Amar Rav Yosef, the Amar Losadi, he told Edom, zil atmur of a kisvalei, hide and do quietly this shtar matanam and giving to someone else. Vikadamri, Amar Rav Yosef, the Amar Lo, that he did not tell the Edom, tisvu b'shuka b'rayis v'tichtavlo. He did not say that they may publicize it. So ask the Gemara, what's the difference between these two explanations? Says the Gemara, Ikvanai is Stamu. In a case where he told the Edom to write, but he didn't tell him keep it quiet, but he also didn't tell them publicize it. So according to the first pshat, that it's a matan temirta because he told them specifically keep it quiet. Here he didn't tell them specifically to keep it quiet, and therefore it will be okay. However, in the case, according to the second opinion, that says that he has to be prepared to publicize it, and here he didn't say that they could publicize it, it's already considered a problem. Amar Rava, now Rava says another halacha. If somebody wrote a matanta matirta, and then it's not completely invalid, that means if somebody wrote this matana tamirta, and then he wrote another shtar on this gift, the halacha is that will be a proof that he did not mean the second transaction, because if he really meant that second transaction, so how could it be good? He already gave it away. And for that much, it's considered enough of a shtar. Amar Papa Hada Rava, this halacha that we just taught from Rava, says the one Labe Feirish Itmar was not taught us explicitly, El Mechlal Itmar, was learned from a story. There's a man that wanted to be Makadosh a wife. Amale, and she said to him, if you write to me all of your assets over, Havinalach, I'll be your wife. Eloi, if not, I'm not agreeable to marry you. He wanted to marry this woman, so he wrote this document. Asbrek Shisha, he had an adult son. And Amalei, and he said to his father, "Hu Gavra, what about me? Matavela, you're giving everything away to your new wife, and I, who am your son, will be left with nothing." Amalei Sadi, so he told witnesses, "Zil at Mirba Avni Avi Yamina, go hide in a place that's called Avi Yamina, and write everything that I own over to my son." And the purpose of writing this was that if afterwards this woman will come with a shtar, that he wrote everything to her, there'll be a prior shtar that he already gave everything away to his son. Asla kamei de Rava, and this question was brought to Rava, and he said, "Amalu loy makana, v'loy makana." neither of them is going to be considered a valid shtar. The first shtar is not a valid shtar because it was done secretively, and we're learning now that a secretive shtar is not a valid shtar. And the second shtar is not considered a valid shtar because it accomplished it that much that the gift that she got was already given to someone else. Man de chazer, somebody who saw this decision of Rava, sava mishum dava medala chaverta, that the first shtar serves a medala for the second shtar. Says the Gemara v'lohi, that's not the way to understand it. Hasam mucha milsa makas on to the kasala. In the story, he was under duress. He was very anxious to marry this woman, and therefore he wrote the shtar. And therefore we could understand that he would never meant to marry her, to do this. Aval hocha, in the first case, leman nichle de lekna, the second shtar that was written properly, he meant to be a good shtar, because it wasn't done under any duress, and it wasn't done secretly. And umar lo nichle, and the first shtar that he did secretively is not a good shtar. The question that many ask when we learn this Gemara, why was what he did acceptable? Or the question is the Kedushin going to be a valid Kedushin? Where she was fooled. She got married under the assumption that she's getting all of these assets, and she's not. So the Chazanish says that if indeed at the same time of the Kedushin, she says, well, I'm only getting married because I'm expecting to get all these assets, and then if then it turns out that he tricked her, the Kedushin will not be a good Kedushin. But what's going to be the halacha if this was something that they discussed before the marriage, but at the time of the marriage, it wasn't repeated? She didn't condition her Kedushin on the acceptance of the gift. So we assume that the Kedushin is a Kedushin, that the Kedushin is not a Kedushin, the Kedushin is not considered, is considered a valid Kedushin. Chelkas Yoiv has a very different approach to this Gemara. And the Chelkas Yoiv's approach to this Gemara actually is that what happened in this Gemara is that the Kedushin never happened, because nobody could suggest that this is a valid Kedushin. Ask the Gemara Yibaylu. So now another question was asked. Stamamai, what's going to halacha if somebody says, write this gift, and he didn't say that I meant it should be kept secret or not? Ravina Malacha Shinan, we didn't have any reason to assume that he has any ulterior motives, any means to keep it secret, which would disqualify the gift. Rashi Amar, why didn't he say explicitly that that's what he means? Chashinan, and says the Gemara V'Hilchos HaLacha is that indeed, Chashinan, we need to be concerned that this person actually meant to do something to keep it secret, which is going to be invalid, that meant to be considered an invalid gift.